back, and in the second session of our meeting, we have visitors here. In the morning, I forgot to introduce Miss Daniels. I think we normally see her with Swazi from the Ministry of Economic Development. We welcome them. Let's officially welcome you. And then we have Miss Ghana. Oh, okay. From DTI. You're welcome. And then we have also a group of students, master's students from UCT. I did talk to them, to about them in the morning. We're expecting them at 9:30. But I'm told they had other business in the morning. They are led by Mr. Chakunda, and we want to also extend a warm welcome to yourself, and hoping that you will enjoy today's deliberations. The committee today is, we started in the morning with the management at 8:30, and then the committee started at 9:00. Actually, to be precise, we corrected around 9:30 or so. We considered a report that is an oversight report that the committee undertook early this year, to the Western Cape and the KwaZulu-Natal. On projects that are funded by SAMAF. We finalized the report in the morning, and then just after that we considered the strategic plan for 2011 up to 2013 for KULA. KULA is one of our development finance institutions, and we just finished with them actually just before lunch, and now we're considering the strategic plan from summer. As I indicated, SAMAF is an acronym, but it stands for South African Microfinance Apex Fund, and they will be telling us of their plans for 2011 up to 2013-14 financial year, but we're focusing mainly on 2011-12 financial year. So the delegation is also welcomed, led by Mr. Naidu, who's still the acting CEO. Yes. Our last engagement was not that much nicer, I must say, but we eventually, I hope that we received all documents, the documentation that we needed, but we're hoping that they have grown from the previous engagement with us, and they managed to prepare information as per our discussion. Mr. Naidu, we are going to be handing over to you just to take us through your strategic plan. But otherwise, everybody must feel free, especially our students here. Feel free. We are told that you study social policy, and this is an area of what we're doing here in Parliament is part of your area of interest, and unfortunately politicians operate different from, you know, professionals. That doesn't mean we're not professional in our dealings, but we are. We make sure that we make people account. That's our responsibility, and we help where possible. Over to you, Mr. Naidu. Oh, sorry. Last time we engaged, we didn't have one member, and he's not here. Where's Mr. Kobanza? Okay, two, actually. We have a new member, Mr. Kobanza. Why is this website? Are there no emotions? Ariko, don't you want to join us here and let Mr. Kobanza sit this side? Okay, over to you, Mr. Naidu.
Chairperson, honorable members, a very good afternoon. And thank you very much for affording us this opportunity to present our strategic plan to the committee. We always find these engagements very useful, and it does contribute to the better working of CEMAC. Chair, if I could just take this opportunity to maybe get my colleagues to introduce themselves. I have a totally new team. The previous team has left CEMAC, so I can just start with Patrick Matoma.
Patrick Matoma, I'm the provincial manager in Limpopo. Presently, I'm acting CEO at CEMAC head office.
I'm Mark Alata, I'm the provincial manager for the Western Cape.
Afternoon, I'm Rita Mietaza, finance manager at CEMAC.
Chair, I must also apologize for the lack of gender representation in this delegation. And it's not my fault. Unfortunately, our HR manager, she is a female, she couldn't turn up, and our previous executives have left. Chair, in my presentation...
Sorry, Mr. Naidu. I didn't quite hear you. What did you say in terms of your female executives?
Sorry, Chair, the executives at CEMAC had left the organization. So I had two people.
Any female?
We do have a female HR manager, and unfortunately she couldn't come to this meeting today. She in fact had a pressing issue, an HR issue at the office. She planned, she in fact booked to come, and this morning she had to stay behind because it had to be sorted out before tomorrow.
I hope she wasn't left deliberately. Okay.
Yeah, I can assure you she wasn't. I will briefly deal with the mandate, vision, mission, and values of the organization. Then I'll give a summary of the key deliverables for the 3 years. I did include CEMAC's current products and services, but I'll also talk about the new products and services that we have developed that will be implemented for the new financial year, very briefly. I'll talk about the alignment of CEMAC to the new growth path. That's the Economic Development Department, that creates new growth path for government as a whole. Then we'll go through the performance targets, the budgets, and some of the challenges that we still encounter within the organization. And the CEMAC provincial office addresses is for information. Chair, the mandate of CEMAC is to create work opportunities and sustainable livelihoods through the facilitation and provision of affordable access to finance by micro, small, and survivalist businesses. So essentially, CEMAC wants to focus on entrepreneurship rather than personal loans. And this is to grow their income and their asset base. We also require to act as a catalyst in the development of a vibrant microfinance industry in South Africa. What that entails is for CEMAC to create these financial intermediaries in various communities so that they can become self-sustainable and be able to provide finance to the community at large. So effectively, what does this mean to CEMAC? As I indicated, is to facilitate the provision of affordable access to finance for micro and survivalist businesses. Extend financial and non-financial services to reach deeper and broader into the rural areas, informal settlements, and peri-urban settlement of South Africa. Build a strong, effective, and efficient wholesale APEC fund, that is CEMAC itself. Contribute to a better quality of life for the South African citizens, and contribute to a sustainable, vibrant microfinance industry in South Africa. Here, the vision is to be a leader in the development of microfinance, and I'm hoping that the committee has probably heard of the merger between Kula, CEMAC, and Small Business from the IDC. and I'm hoping they continue to pursue this vision within Kula itself, because I think microfinance, particularly at the intermediary level, is very important in our country. Our mission is to provide developmental finance and non-financial services to financial intermediaries through the mobilization of financial intermediaries and the wholesaling of funds. So we lend monies to intermediaries and they on lend to the end users. Development of institutional capacity both within SEMEF and also within our financial intermediaries. And obviously lobby and advocacy towards policy development. We also want to develop partnership with various organizations that will assist us in achieving our mandate and objectives. Share the values are very similar to the ones that we had before. We spoke about integrity, transparency, professionalism, accountability, and high performance. I think all of these values are critical to the organization, particularly because it deals with finances. I think the integrity, professionalism, particularly accountability, is critical to the organization. I've been there now, this is my 9th month in the organization, and the sense that I get, all of this is developing very well in the organization. I did indicate to the committee previously that there was discomfort within staff of the organization, but I think the things have developed very nice, and I'll probably talk a little bit about, very briefly, of some of our achievements to date within the organization. Chair, the key deliverables over the 3 years, we want to provide financial support to financial intermediaries totaling 279 million rand for on lending, 115 million rand for capacity and institutional building support. If you add those two together, that adds up to over 100 million rand per annum. Up until the end of last year, SEMEF had not in any year disbursed more than 23 million rand in an entire year. For this financial year, up to the end of March, we are estimating to have distributed more than 40 million rand. So in the 9 months that we've been there, I think we've made tremendous progress. And this now is actually pushing the limits, going beyond the borders of what SEMEF has ever achieved before. And we believe that we can achieve this. We want to also establish 122 new financial intermediaries. We want to work a lot in peri-urban and rural areas. And this, again, exceeds anything that SEMEF has ever done in a financial year. Obviously, this is over 3 financial years. We also want to provide funding for 193 financial intermediaries. This will include the new ones plus the ones that we've got in our books. We're estimating to create 56,000 projected new jobs. So this is the first time we're putting this as a target in SEMEF books. We've never had this before. So we've worked with our provincial officers, our financial intermediaries to give a best estimate. But what we will do, we'll be monitoring this during the year, and if need be, we'll make an adjustment during the adjustment estimates process, whether we need to increase it or decrease the jobs. But we're fairly confident over the 3 years we'll be able to achieve it. But I will show you each year what we will be targeting later on. We want to have diversified microfinance products to address the needs of financial intermediaries. Now, SEMEF had very few products that actually did not meet the needs of our clients, and some of the committee members that visited our clients would have ascertained that already. So we worked through that. We've now got a set of new products, and I'll very briefly later on share with you what some of those are, and maybe later on forward it to the committee. The product is sitting with the department at the moment. I'm hoping that within the next week or two they will have approved it for implementation new financial year. We want to increase visibility and awareness of SEMEF's mandate, products, and services. And in that regard, Chair, we've allocated sufficient resources in terms of funding to be able to do that in the new financial year. What we also need to do is make sure that our back office and our support services are well aligned to the marketing initiative. It's pointed us marketing, but not being able to support those initiatives. We started with improvements in our informational technology. I think we're substantially there. We want to improve further on that. We also want to assist our financial intermediaries to improve on their information technology so that they can report better, they can manage the businesses better. Improve turnaround times. We've made huge improvements, and that's why we managed to disperse as much as we did. But I think we can get better as an organization. So that overall, very briefly, is what our key deliverables over the 3 years are going to be. Chair, these are currently our products and services. Now, you'll see essentially it's three products and services that we have. We have developmental loans that go from 4 million to 10 million. Then we have institutional incentives, that is essentially capacity building that goes to from 1 to 5 million. And then we have savings and mobilization, which is essentially 200,000 rand. These are for small institution startups. Now what we've gone and done is, we've gone and split it between startup organizations, middle-sized organizations, and large organizations, so that we can provide funding for those three categories. For example, previously where we provided funding for startups, we only provided capacity building funds. So they didn't have any money for on lending. Now we've created a product where if we give them capacity building funds, they can also access funding for on lending as a startup. But obviously we will be able to give them guidance. What we've also done is we've created what we call special products. And these will be not in the normal course of business, where there's a special need. For example, if five individuals come together and they find that, and they probably be aligned to the Kula kind of direct lending. At the moment, if there are five individuals that come, they have a good initiative, but their funding requirements fall within SAMF mandate, it's very difficult for us to fund them because we don't provide for five individuals. So what we've done is we've gone and created special products to be able to cater for those. But Chair, we will share those products and services with you. If not today, we can forward it to the committee tomorrow. Unfortunately, I didn't bring it along with me. And I indicated at the bottom that we are leaving the thresholds. But Chair, this will be an ongoing process. As and when we engage with communities, and you see later on, we've now put a formal process where we will be engaging with the end user, not with the intermediaries, but with the end user, to understand what their needs are. Chair, the alignment to the new growth path, effectively, we will be contributing to the strengthening the access to microfinance for small enterprises. In terms of enterprise development, we will be promoting small business and entrepreneurship via our intermediaries. And as I indicated, we've now got special products that we've developed to assist them directly. We will try to eliminate as much red tape as possible, both at SMF level and also assist our financial intermediaries to eliminate red tape. We will pay SMF small businesses within 30 days. In fact, at the moment, we pay them within 14 days. We're well within that target. In terms of spatial development here, we've already started a process. In fact, we've contacted some of the committee members and community leaders to assist us in creating awareness on SAMAC products and getting it to the communities. So we will be working with provinces and municipalities to extend SAMAC products to the communities. And then obviously we want to address a key development goal for women empowerment and youth employment. And these are some of the key things that we've extracted from the new growth path, and we'll be contributing as MF towards the new growth path. So now, in terms of each of the financial years, we will see that these are now the end users. We expect to lend, and here I must tell you that I believe these figures are conservative, but we have to use historical figures because the National Treasury guidelines request us to use a SMART criteria. So we use historical guidelines, but we believe that we'll probably, and we'll obviously adjust the figures midterm, but we expect to have 22,000 new borrowers in the next financial year, and then it increases as we go along. But you will see our focus largely is on women and rural development. If you see the first column there, the women contains a large percentage of our total borrowers, and so does the rural. The youth and the disabled, we need to work a bit harder on that, Chair. Admittedly, we need to start focusing on them. But we've started the process in terms of engaging. We've already also started with engaging with disabled organizations. In fact, we've engaged with disabled organizations to employ interns at SEMA and youth. Chair, these are graphs to just give you a sense of, from from year on year the increase in our numbers, and to also give you a broad overview of where our main focus is going to be. And you'll see that woman largely features in our graphs here, and then in the next graph you'll see that we focus on rural development. Then, Chair, in terms of end-user service loans, as I indicated earlier, we'll be focusing on entrepreneurial development. You'll see that 88% of our funding is expected to go towards that, and it increases as we go along towards 2013-14. The new jobs created, we're hoping that in the next financial year we'll create approximately 13,000 jobs, increasing to 18,000 and 25,000 at the end of 2013-14. And Chair, the other key thing that we also do is we try and encourage our intermediaries to encourage communities to save with them. So we've also set targets with respect to that. And you see that also increases as we go from year on year. And Chair, this is a graph that just gives you an overview, the picture of what we want to do with our loans. And you see that microenterprise gets the largest percentage of our funding. Then, Chair, in terms of funding support to FIs, you'll see that next year for on lending, we want to just disperse 65 million for on lending and capacity building 35 million rand. And you'll find the proportion of on lending to capacity building on lending increases as we go. So there'll be more on lending than capacity building because we expect to have established these institutions and given them a lot of institutional capacity in the initial years. In fact, in this year, we've done a lot of work also with the institutions. Our repayment rate, Chair, you see that here again, I must admit that it's historical and we've been very conservative. In terms of this financial year, our repayment rate is close on 87% as at the end of December. So we do have a very good repayment rate, and that largely is attributed to, I think, our provincial offices working closely with the financial intermediaries. Our portfolio risk is essentially funds that we probably would not collect, and you'll see that the 60 plus 40 adds up to 100%. So it's just the difference between 100% and the 60%. And then FI retention, here again, Chair, I must say that we are conservative. We want to retain as many of our financial intermediaries that we fund. So there's going to be a huge drive to work very, very closely with the financial intermediaries. Now, in terms of approving, these are new financial intermediaries that SEMAC will bring onto the books. The microfinance institutions, it's four for to the next year, but our financial services cooperatives is 32. Because microfinance intermediaries are largely huge institutions that have a presence throughout the country, a single institution. We have few of that in South Africa. But we will be dealing with the financial services cooperatives that works within communities, and it will be they'll work within a certain location only rather than the whole country. And then as they develop, they'll develop into microfinance intermediaries. So, Chair, you see that also increases as we go along, and this is far more than we've ever budgeted in previous financial years. So there's going to be huge drive to increase the number of financial intermediaries that we have. Then, Chair, this is just a graph showing the on lending and the capacity building over the period. Now, the financial intermediaries to be funded, these are both intermediaries that are on our books at the moment and new ones. And you'll see those also increase as we go along over the years. So what we've also done in this financial year, previously we never had this. We never had the target of outreach to new communities. Now we say we want the provinces to give us targets. So at the end of the year, we can measure that. You've been to these communities, what have you delivered in these communities, new communities? Previously, we just worked on an ad hoc basis, but now it's targeted, and we know where we want to go to. In terms of capacity building grants, Chair, you can see that also increases over the year. Then we want to assist financial intermediaries, particularly the new ones, with the financial reporting. And this is the first time we also will be doing this, and this is the first time we put it as a target in our books. So we've just put three over 12 over the 3 financial years. Then Chair, I indicated that we want to now assess what the needs are of our end users, not our financial intermediaries, but of our end users, the people that actually get our money. A very similar exercise that that we did with you, but this will be now be a formalized exercise, where we go to them with a questionnaire and do a proper assessment. So we're saying the first year we'll probably have 60% of our end users completed, the second year 80%, and then 100% the final year, because we're starting it off in this financial year. So we want to do that so that we can put in interventions to assist our financial intermediaries, to assist our end users. Then, Chair, we, in terms of capacity building, now this also talks to our end users. We will design products to be able to put in interventions from the results of our survey. So we will be doing that every year. So it will be 100% complete each of the year. Now, Chair, in the life of CEMEF is 7 years old now. It's never had an unqualified audit report. For this financial year, we are very hopeful that we will get an unqualified audit report, because we worked very hard at it. And hence we put that as a target. And I think government also has it as a target that come 2014, they want to have clean audit reports. So we put that as a target, but we're hoping this year we will get an unqualified audit report. Chair, we spoke about the payment of creditors within 30 days, and we are well within the 30-day limit. We began a process this year, and I did speak to the committee about this when I presented the annual report. We're implementing a software to manage our turnaround times. This will come into effect 1st of April this year. So we spoke about surveys. Now, in this financial year, now this financial year that's coming to an end 31st of March, we commissioned a survey to be done with our financial intermediaries. That report will be finalized and will be out within the next 2 to 3 weeks. So we'll have the results of that, and we'll put interventions in place to address any shortcomings that report indicates. Now, in the next financial year, as I indicated, we want to do a formalized satisfaction survey with our end users, the people that actually utilize our money. And I'm hoping that within the first 6 months of the year, we'll have that finalized and then put in our interventions to address any shortcomings. And so we also want to print brochures in 11 official languages. Now, we have to do this in consultation with COLA. What we don't want to do is print thousands of brochures and then find that we have to change all of that come probably end of the financial year. So we'll do that in consultation with COLA. We also want to profile CEMEF in the media. We worked on three peer province, and we will do that on a fairly large scale, utilizing community newspapers. That's what we want to do. We want to do it largely using community newspapers. Chair, budget for the financial years, you will see that our expenditure, our expenses, 2011-12 is 61 million in relation to 100 million rand. And you'll find that the percentage of expenditure to transfers to FIs is going to reduce as we go into the last financial year. And we're deliberately targeting that our admin expenses in relation to our transfers has to reduce. And we're also working on that. Chair, some of the challenges that we have at CEMEF, I think the sustainability of financial intermediaries. As I indicated, we've done a lot of work. We've developed a manual accounting system for our startups, which we're rolling out. We've trained our staff in this financial year. We'll be closely monitoring the financial intermediaries that we fund. We expect reports from our provincial managers on a monthly basis with respect to our financial intermediaries, to ensure that whenever there is a problem, we will be able to put in interventions to address those problems. Share the capacity within CEMEF and the FIs, that is also a problem. I think at CEMEF what they've done is when they employ staff largely in the provinces, they've employed, and I'm saying it with respect to my colleagues around the table, but I'm being honest about it, they've employed a lot of social workers. So the financial aspect of it is what's lacking. So we've done a lot of training this year. We spent close to 1 million rand just training staff this year. We have someone in HDI, and we believe they're now reasonably up to speed to be able to assist our financial intermediaries. Then in terms of our provincial spatial demographics, the issue is a distance between communities like the Northern Cape, like the Eastern Cape. There's huge distances. And what we try to do at SEMAC is create a quarterly forum so that the intermediaries can interact with each other, to be able to share experiences, successes, and be able to help each other. Now, these spatial demographics create problems, especially for that. Secondly, for the staff within SEMAC, we have very few staff in each of the provinces, at a maximum five. So we've got to work with that. So that's still a challenge. And hopefully when the merger between Kula and SEMAC takes place, and Kula does have some staff in the provinces, they will be able to work together. So I think that will be one of the benefits that we'll get out of this, besides the benefit of cost savings. And lastly, Chair, the turnaround times, we want to improve further on our turnaround times. And I think the new software system that was going to come into being in April will now give us factual information on our turnaround times. And then, Chair, this offices, provincial offices at SEMAF. Thank you. That is the presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Naidu, for the presentation. Can we now interact with the presentation? I'm noting Dr. Rabi, Mr. Mabasa, Mr. Kwabaza, Mr. Mare, Mr. Ntuli, before Mr. Ntuli, Mem Sotis, and then Mr. Ntuli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First and foremost, Mr. Naidu, Mr. Allard visited us in my constituency. We had a very constructive talk there. You are a man of your word. I just want to say that I think we'll reap the benefits of that as well, because there's a lot of unemployment and poverty in my rural constituency. What I want to ask you, you spoke about turnaround times. What would you say is the optimal turnaround time, or what are you striving for? Would you say 2 weeks, 3 weeks? Because I think time is very important to the micro business environment. I think that's very important. And then you said something else, which I agree with you. I think you said that quite a number of your employers conducted social work, but they're knowledge regarding sort of cash flow and basic economic terms is rather limited. Have you given them refresher courses, what to look for how to optimize the business? This morning we had a very constructive submission by one of our senior officials, and he said that business plans are not always important. You find that some people run a business of 30 or 40 years, and it's not possible to draw up a business plan, but they know how to manage their cash flow within the business itself. So I'd just like to get some information. What was your point of departure when it came to sort of re-educating, but just to enable your officials to assess the viability of a micro or a small business? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Rabi. Next, Mr. Mavasa.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. Thanks for the input made. If I start from the back going forward, on page 9, I noticed the last bullet there is addressing key developmental goals for women, youth, and then you did not mention people with disabilities. But then when we go to page 10, I couldn't interpret those percentages properly. Especially when I look at youth, and people with disabilities, the 10 and the 2, the percentages. I couldn't interpret percentage 10 of what, 2 of what. You know, I missed that. And then on page 5, when you speak of development of valuable partnerships, I thought I should request that you list them, you know, just so that we also visualize those essential partnerships. On page 6, at the bottom, the relevant behavior by staff. That behavior, I couldn't interpret the context of that word. And then the one but last, page 7, what will you define as an ideal financial intermediary? If you could map out and say, if everything was in your power, this is what an ideal intermediary would be. And the last one are the loans on page 8. Just to give a bit of flesh under bullet 1, the education loan as well as the emergency loans, just to so that one understands them better. That's on page 8, sorry, did I say 9? On page 8. Thanks, correction.
Thank you very much, Mother.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 10, I see on the last column on 7 semi-urban areas there is a decline in your performance targets. I want to understand why that decline over the next 3 years. I raise this question because a large majority of semi-urban areas would also be made up of poor informal settlements, yet in terms of your planning here, you envisaged a decline in your targets. Secondly, on page 11, you know, the youth is reported to be the majority of the unemployed at this point in time. I realize also that your performance target, so far as the youth is concerned, is significantly low. Why would that be so? But also, just as a matter of interest, men seem not to be your focus. I don't know whether it is because the majority of them are employed or one would assume that women are obviously the family provider, and quite possibly that is your focus, but I just thought I must raise this thing. Chairperson, I do want to appreciate the target for unqualified reports. That's it's appreciated. I think I'll end there for now, Chairperson.
Thanks, Dr. Professor.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the submission. I think some of us got a huge role to play. In my opinion, can make a impact on economic development than many, many people think. Just in terms of our last visit that we've had in Khayelitsha as well, and now the things that we have discussed this morning in our report, I just want to go back to page 8 where it talks about the SANRAL products and services. And just getting clarity from you with regards to your customers. Your customers is not the end users. Your customers is the financial intermediaries and the corporates. Now, what is that relationship between you and them, you know, to go on as forwarding lenders of that money, and eventually to align that with the objectives of government and of economic development? To what extent can you prescribe to them how they must structure their deals and how they must charge interest, service costs, things like that? Is that something that you can prescribe? Is that something that should be regulated? How best should one do that? Because that to a large extent depends on your relationship with them and the agreement between yourselves and the financial intermediaries. Thank you, Madam Chair.
The specifics on Charon terms is covered by Dr. Radin. However, it appears again here as a challenge. And given all the challenges here, I would like to know how are they going to affect your time frame in as far as the safety is concerned. Capacity building, the Charon terms, as you mentioned. And you said presently, your turnaround time is 14 days, but you say you are also targeting 30 days. Why not maintain or sustain the good practice? If you have in 14 days, why go to 30 days? And on the budget here, we don't see provision for maintenance. You know, if we do not maintain our software, we'll have to buy every now and then, and that's not cost effective. I'm trying to keep questions that have been covered, Jen. But that's it to appreciate that in the provinces now we have the fiscal addresses, contact numbers, in case they want to make some follow up. And thanks for that.
Thanks, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair. And I would also like to welcome the presentation. I would like to concur what Honorable Kabaza was saying about the unqualified audit, that it is very encouraging. Chairperson,
they've said that they are not lending to an individual. I want to check the education loans. How do you give education loans? If you can expatiate on that one, and if they can give us the examples of this the payment of the small business suppliers, as you were saying that it won't be taking more than 30 days. Can you give us an example? Who are those, for example, who are those suppliers? How do you quantify? This question we tried to ask in the cooler as well. As your target, you say you are going to employ 56,000, or we are going to create 56,000 jobs. How do you quantify the number vis-a-vis the money? Let's say you've got
10 million, then how do you know that this 10 million is going to create X opportunities? Whether that's just a thumb suck or you've got a benchmark or some sort of, if you can take us through that. Lastly, Chairperson, I'll build on the question of Mr. Mare, Honorable Mare. Of when we were visiting KwaZulu Natal, we found the modus operandi of the summer. For other people, you say they must save so much money so that you start lending. To others, you say no. If they produce a plan, then they'll be able to be given money. And then to others, even the capacity, the money for capacity building, some of them do not get it. And I think the argument was, why are we not consistent? And why do we have a different criteria for the same product? We wanted to check that. What causes that? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Mr. Naidu and the delegation. We have issued these questions to you, and I just want to add a few questions. I'm not sure what you're saying about your product list in terms of your page 8, product and service list. You're saying this is not a definite kind of a list. You are saying the above thresholds are under review to ensure relevance to the market that some have served, but at the same time you said they are still awaiting approval. Is that what you say from the department? I heard you wrong. Okay. Can you then, in terms of this product, I think it's the same question perhaps that was asked by Mr. Ndule. Have you been able to build sufficient capacity to be able then to run this type of product in a sustainable and effective and efficient way? I think my colleagues have spoken about experiences that we have during our visits. It was quite clear that people are not inducted the same or uniformly, hence the application of your rules and procedures not the same. Is it an intentional issue, or is it something that is a mistake? I just want to understand that. And you have a list on your main document, the principal document. I think it's on page 26, if I'm not mistaken, where you have targets by provinces. Yeah, consolidated provincial targets. And then you have a note at the end there. I'm not too sure what does that mean. Does it mean that we don't take this targets seriously, as the department is still going to verify, to review them? This is your annual stretch plan. We cannot have notes like this when we think this is the plan for the department, I mean for the institution. I think we need concrete information here, because we have to follow up. We have to check also in terms of, we have to track progress. And we don't want you to come back and say, no, the department did not agree with the targets, which then leads me to my next question, whether to have the necessary tools and capacity within the institution then to look at such information, because it cannot be the department. The department should oversee the institution, some of, or ensure that you do the right thing at the end of the day. But it cannot prescribe as to what is it that you should be doing. It should be targets from yourself that you should feed the department, so that the department, from what you're saying, should then make their own targets based on the information that you've given them. But what is here, it doesn't give me any commitment from yourself. If you can look at that, Mr. Naidu, it will help. In general, I just want to find out from you, if you were to compare the current financial year's stretch plan with the current, with the one you are presenting today, what would you say is the difference? I had a similar challenge when it comes to your percentage, your working of percentages, because I tried to consult the researcher here, just maybe it's because I don't understand things properly, but it's quite clear from the question of Mr. Mabasa that I'm also having a similar a challenge regarding your breakdown. Breakdown of that 22.116. It's very clear when it comes to the gender and the rural-urban allocation. But in terms of the youth and disabled, it becomes a challenge. I just want to... just to ascertain from you whether these are real, are you sure of the figures as they are here? You know why I'm asking? Because of the exercise we went through last time, and I just don't want us to go back to the same and not be sure of what is happening. I know there's an issue of capacity that you alluded to, that you're still building capacity, but at the same time you're setting yourself, you know, high targets. I'm not sure which is which must come first, because if you feel you're not capacitated enough, I think it will be better to deal with that before we come with the high targets, because you are now putting pressure on yourselves on things that you might not be able to achieve. And remember, we are mostly concerned of you. This is what you are dealing with. I think it's Dr. Rabi who alluded to this, that this is a very important institution, mainly because you're dealing with the poorest of the poor. And it's very important that the stakeholders that you're dealing with are, you know, treated, you know, with what? Certainty, if I were to use that word. And whatever we plan and promise them, it should be certain. Otherwise, we'd be creating false promises. I'm saying that because I don't want us to agree with this, and because it sounds okay, and at the end of the day, we make false promises. Because we all agree, even when I read the forewords by the DG and yourselves, we are agreeing that there's a lot that needs to be done within SAMAF. And I'm not sure whether in terms of our plan, we are really preparing enough so that we are able to hit the ground running when the time comes. The new products or the new products and services are okay, but they can only be okay in as far as our readiness to implement. That's what is important. May I then hand over to you to respond, Mr. Naidu, and your team.
Okay, thank you very much for those questions. I will take most of the questions, and if I miss any, my colleagues will assist me if you don't mind. Chair, in terms of the turnaround times, now there are different turnaround times that we, as an organization, that we need to consider. We need to consider turnaround time for a brand new organization that we're starting up to the point where we approve that organization. So there's a lot of work that needs to go in there. For that turnaround time, we're looking for a minimum of 90 days, which might sound a lot, but there's a lot of work that we need to do in terms of creating institutional capacity and all of those issues before we can actually approve anything for the organization. For an organization that is that is up and running and that understands the workings of business, we don't see ourselves having a turnaround time more than 30 days. That's the target that we want to aim for. Having said that, if a documentation lands up in a provincial office, okay, within a week they must be able to have assessed it, consulted with the institution, done all the work that needs to be done. When it comes to the Pretoria office, we have a further engagement on the document, so we do a due diligence on it. And we are planning to do that not later than a week also within the Pretoria office. So a month for an established organization is the target that we'd like to ultimately achieve. And then, Chair, in terms of refresher course for the staff, I alluded earlier on the presentation that in this current financial year, we spent about R1 million on training on a number of interventions. Firstly, through the University of Pretoria, we have a program specifically designed for microfinance. So most of our provincial staff have attended that. That's the one we've done. The second thing we've done all the Microsoft products. We sent our staff on training on Microsoft products. The third thing we've done, Chair, is we have commenced creating templates. For example, an income and expenditure on your Excel spreadsheet, there's a template. So the line items that does not apply to an institution, they don't have to fill in. So those are the kind of things that we're trying to do to make it easier, both for the financial intermediary and the staff to be able to work with the financial intermediary. That particular aspect is work in progress. The other thing that we've done is we've designed a together with CBDA, which is an institution of the National Treasury, a manual accounting course that all our staff have gone on, and which they will now impart to the financial intermediaries, particularly the startups. So we've done that in terms of training. I think we've done quite a lot this year. We set the basis in terms of capacitating the institution. But here, there's always never enough in terms of capacitating staff within the organization. So it will be an ongoing process. Then, Chair, in terms of the percentages, if we can go back to page 10 on the percentages, if I can quickly explain the percentages. So we have the total borrowers of 22,116. If you take 80% of that, you'll get 17,693. Then if you get to the youth and the disabled, if you take 10% of the 22,000, maybe I should have in the brackets put it in the measurement column. If you take 10% of 22,000, it's approximately 2,212. Now, the reason that the slight difference in that is because we do it per province and it's rounding, so it rounds up to 2,212, and 2% is 443 of the 22,000. So that's how the percentages work. Does it make sense? Yes? Absolutely. Is it? Okay. I think the next time what I will do is I'll put the actual calculations in brackets. And I know it gets when you put it like this, it makes it difficult for a reader that's reading it for the first time objectively. Then, Chair, in terms of partnerships, we have started developing partnerships. I indicated the first one at Pretoria University where we've developed a microfinance course. Then we have a German institution, DRBG, that has done training for SAMA, effectively free of charge. The only thing we provide is a lunch for the staff, and they've gone like on a week's training, so it's very good. So we've got a formal agreement with them on microfinance. We have other institutions now, Chair. The top of my head, I can't remember, but we will certainly list those institutions when we do our annual report. It will be there when we do our annual report presentation to you. sorry, Chair, page 6, in terms of the values, the relevant, you indicated the relevant behavior by staff. If you go to the main document, we actually say in the main document what the behavior of the staff should be to be able to achieve those values. So those are listed. I'm just trying to find the page in my document. If you go to page 13, you'll see that we have our values and then we've got the behaviors. For example, for integrity, we say we must adhere to agreements. We must report data truthfully. So those are the kind of behaviors that we will be looking for. So those are listed. Unfortunately, I couldn't put them in the presentation because they were too many. An ideal financial intermediary. An ideal financial intermediary, I think, should firstly start off by being self-sustainable. Now, to be self-sustainable, you must be able to have all of the systems and processes in place to manage your finances internally, to be able to collect your debts, all of your debts, not to have extensive write-offs. I think your systems, your controls needs to be in place, and obviously your governance, like your boards, and those kind of things, and your reporting mechanisms, particularly on a monthly basis. That very generically is what we would see as an ideal financial intermediary. Now, we have, probably I didn't report this, but I'll report it when we do our annual report. We have done an exercise throughout the country in each province. We've got all the financial intermediaries together. We did it again through CBDA. CBDA is one of our other partners, an institution that supports the National Treasury. We've identified the gaps in each of these financial intermediaries, and it's a process that they go through. So it's like a self-discovery process that we've implemented. That report has also just come out now. It's quite a comprehensive report. We're going to take that report and also put in interventions for these intermediaries. For example, an intermediary might be at a certain stage of development in terms of the financial systems or the controls or the training requirements. So there are different aspects that we've utilized to benchmark. So there is a benchmark against that they've been measured. So we've done that exercise also. In terms of education, housing loans, now these loans are made by our financial intermediaries to the end user. It's not CEMAP that does it directly. Now, housing loans are essentially loans where it's not to purchase a new house, where communities want to put an extension to the house, or they want to maybe renovate the house. So they give housing loans in that respect. Education loans are where at the beginning of a financial year, a household doesn't have sufficient money to pay for school fees. The financial intermediaries make finances accessible to them. However, as CEMAF, we have prescribed that only certain percentage of that, and it's included in this document, that can go towards that kind of loans. Those are essentially consumption loans. Large percentage of that must go to towards entrepreneurship development. Okay, in terms of page 10, the percentage decrease, and maybe my colleagues will help me a bit more here, because when we developed this strategy, Chair, we consulted with every single individual and organization, every single province, and the provincial managers engaged with their financial intermediaries. Now, you see the percentage decreases, but the actual numbers, if you go to page 10, you'll see the actual numbers don't decrease. They increase. Now, that's because our overall borrowers increases over the years. So it's a percentage that decreases, but maybe my colleagues will be able to give you a bit more understanding as to why the percentage decreases.
Let's clarify the challenge on page 10 so that we put it into perspective. You see what you are saying here. You have simply taken 22,116 and said women, children, women, men, this is how many, and urban, rural, peri-urban and rural, this is, that's not what we want. What we want is, out of, let's say, this is 100% rural, semi-urban, out of that, how many, out of 100%, what is the share the percentage share of women? What is the percentage share of disabled? What is the total percentage share of youth? This is what we need. And what is the total percentage share of the previously disadvantaged? In that way, you are able to give us a clear background, because as it is now, it's very easy, and but very difficult to track. It's not easy to track because you are simply dividing to say out of 22,116, we have 13,000 from the urban, and then we have 8,000 from the semi-urban. But of that rural people, how many percent of that are women? Of the semi-urban, how many percent of that are women, and so forth and so forth? The youth, the thing. Because the way you are doing this, it's a very simple way of doing it, and it has a potential of hiding certain information in it. So that is the challenge that some of us find ourselves, because I'm not able to clarify, because I'm working percentages here out of 100. And to me, 100 is the easiest percentage. Because if you say 100, then you work out the youth and the thing, then it becomes above, all and over and above the 100%, of which it doesn't begin to give me a clear picture. So I think it's very important that we get it in that way, so that we are able to follow that. I don't know whether Mr. Mabasa had the same similar problem, a challenge too. Yes.
So Chair, just to clarify, what you would like to see is, out of the total borrowers, you would like to see what percentage of that is rural women and what is rural men?
The base.
Oh, yes.
Is 100. The base, you know, the base that we're working on is 100%. And then we are saying, out of that 100%, what is the target for the financial year? What is the target of women's percentage share? You can break it down into urban, semi-urban, or what, but what we need is the total information, so that we are able then to say, in terms of rural areas, this is what we use. And perhaps also we will even go further and say, define what you mean by rural, but now that we know the type of areas that you've targeted, it makes it easy for us, because we now understand that you are focused more in the rural area. But it helps also to check, so that we are able to map out the progress in terms of these areas. I think that's what we're looking for.
Chair, we at the moment we don't have that information, but we could gather that information for the committee.
Yeah. Sorry, Mr. Naidu, for coming back and disturbing you while responding. You see, what worries me further is the fact that, you know, the information per province says you are awaiting the department to review. Hence, I'm worried about this figure, because, you know, they don't represent certainty. Yes. So if you can perhaps provide that information, because on Wednesday next week we are sitting to finalize the report. If we can get that information at least by Friday, so that we are able to consolidate in time. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe at this point I should clarify the point about the comment that is made on page 26.
No, all three pages. Too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you see, Chair, if you see new jobs created, mm-hmm. It's got a little asterisk there. Okay, and that particular point only relates to the new jobs created, and what I indicated was, this is the first time SAMF is actually put new jobs created as a target. What we have done is we've engaged with our financial intermediaries, okay, and they've given us this information. So what the department has said, we've engaged with the minister on this also. What the minister has said, okay, you've got this from them, but you don't have any historical data on it, so we don't know how accurate this is. So what we'll do during the year, we'll assess it, and when it comes to the adjustment estimate, it might be that we have to amend the amended figure. That was the only reason for putting the comment there, Chair.
Do you want me to come in again? You know, I'm saying, yes, we understand you don't have a baseline, but this type of comment doesn't give us certainty. The baseline information is very important, I agree, but are you going to await that period, the department, because we are not talking about the adjustment here, we are talking about the department. That is what worries me. You say the department has not, or the provinces, and just to read it, these targets have been developed by some of the SAMAF provinces, meaning that they are not being consolidated by yourself. You know, you never check them, and are currently being reviewed by the department to ensure they are credible and verifiable. It says a lot, you know. And to leave it like that and say, yes, this is what, then it means you're giving us information that's not cooked, to be honest. And that's why I cannot just leave this without mentioning it, because it's a, because whatever you are basing your information on or your plans on, it's something that is not verified, that's not credible or solid, which is it's quite problematic. I don't know whether you understand what I mean.
Yeah. No, Chair.
Just before you continue, let's. I'm getting an indication that the students are leaving now, and we want to thank them. Also, they are thanking us for accommodating them, for allowing them to observe, and now they are leaving. I just want them to give them an opportunity to leave, so that we don't get destabilized. Thank you very much, Mr. Chakunda, for the visit and interest in the committee.
Good luck.
Sorry, Mr. Naidu, over to you again.
No problem. Chair, I think your comments are taken. Let me just say that as SMF, we have gone through a process in terms of getting these figures together. When the department looked at our document, in fact, they went through it in detail, they engaged with us. What they said is they will also like to get satisfaction on these figures. We told them the process we followed. We engaged with our financial intermediaries, and obviously we had not kept this kind of information previously. In fact, I must say that the department that insisted we put that in there because they want to also verify the figures themselves. But we are comfortable with the figures that we have. But obviously we said we use that, we follow the process with the financial intermediaries to get those figures.
Well, I don't know what other members are saying on this one. Maybe we should spend some time, a few minutes on this. Mr. Kwabaza, Mr. Nyekemba.
Yes, Chairperson, I don't know whether I'm understanding these numbers well as well too. The little complication I have, for instance, on page 36 to 41. No, yes, to 41, where you're quoting provincial numbers. You say, for instance, take page 26, and this is consistent throughout the those numbers. You say the total borrowers is 5,000, but when you put together those numbers from 4,000 to the 100 of the disabled, they are above 5,000, and then the percentages are consistent throughout. But if you also add the percentages at the end, they add up to 112%. But below, where you say rural and semi-urban, they that goes back to 100%. That also presents a bit of a difficulty. If that could be explained, and if you look, as I say, through those pages, it's the same thing. I just wanted to say, Chairperson, on KwaZulu-Natal, your numbers also increase very, you know, significantly. The increases are significantly low for all the categories you mentioned there. For instance, the 338 women and 459 and 482. It's even worse for the youth. It's 55, 57, and 1 in 2013, 2014.
Thanks, Mr.
Thank you very much. I think partly I'm covered by my colleague, but I think the point here is, if one listened to the point that you have raised, but I can see the entity is having energy to argue against what you said, because if I understood you correctly, was to say, given the in fact there are two categories that you are looking at, which have a much percentage. In fact, you are looking at women, which is 80% in terms of page 10, and rural, which is 2%. Now the question, if I understood it correctly, which is something that you have not done, is to say, in the 62% of rural, how much percentage of women is that? But I understand you saying that no, what you have done is as per the requirements of the department. But at the same time, Chairperson is saying that next week we'll be looking at those. You get the point. So I don't see why are you duck and diving when a point is being identified that what you have presented, we understand the number, but is lacking of this. I think that was the issue which Chairperson was raising. You see, the other point that I wanted to raise, Chair, really, is I'm a little bit disturbed. Maybe it's because I'm new in this committee. It's for the first time for you to see me. Is the point that you raised to say that in you have instead being an entity that has to deal with microfinance, obviously people that you might need, at least they have the know-how of finances. But however, you have focused on social workers, which then resulted having a huge expenditure on administration, because they have to be capacitated, even if you might have other interventions that took place. Because I don't see a reason as to why don't you have partnership with universities, not only for capacity building or the staff that might have, but in terms of recruiting new staff as an organization, at least you get people who have undergone some kind of theory studies in that in the area where you are in. And I wanted to raise that point, Chair. And the other point for me is that, I mean, the delegation is a boys' choir, and on all strategic plans, you are talking about targeting women, people with disability, and all of that, but it doesn't reflect from you. So that on its own, obviously, for me, is something is not good. Thank you, John.
Thanks. I actually opened up on this matter because I thought it's very important, information from yourself should be credible and should help us to help you do your job better. Because we are not just here as opponents. No, we are overseeing your work, ensuring that whatever you tell us, is done. That's what we're trying to say. But we cannot help you if you bring us information that is half cooked, unfortunately. We have to have information that's very credible, that you yourself feel very confident, you know, about. So that at the end of the day, if tomorrow we say we go out there and spread the message as you presented to us, we are not, you know, called next time to say, but why did you lie to us, and so forth and so forth. We want to present this information with confidence, knowing that as you implement, we will be proud to say we told you this is what is going to happen, and it's happening as you told us. That's the reason why we want very, very credible information. Member Desi, were you still on the very same matter? Okay. Thank you. We just interrupted you because really it's quite disturbing on that, and we need it to be corrected before we can submit it. Okay.
Chair, let me just say, I think maybe the member misunderstood. I agree with the chair totally in respect of what percentage of rural are women and what percentage of rural are men. That we will get that information to the chair. I agree with the chair that's not in here, so we need to get that information to the chairperson. So let me just explain how these percentages work. You see, the total borrowers is 22,116, so that is 100%, okay, of total borrowers. Of the 22,116, 80% of that is women, 20% of that is men, okay? So that adds up to 100%. Of
that is men, youth, men, disabled.
Okay, okay.
Men.
Just men and women, okay? So that adds up to 100%.
100% should be men, youth, men, disabled included.
No, within that woman, there's youth. Within that woman, there's disabled also.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
So we will separate that for you, Chair.
That's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing with you that is what you can't inform 100%. But then you are able to go back and say, in terms of youth, it's 10%. In terms of disabled, it's 2%. It becomes very, very clear. But in terms of the formula you've used, it becomes over and above. I don't know if you understand.
Yeah.
It doesn't give a clear picture. Whereas if you were to say, this is actual, out of this is rural, urban, and this is actual percentage women, this is actual percentage men, you know, it becomes a clear target, so that as we come back out of your 22,116, it becomes 100%.
So, Chair, then what I need to do, maybe if I just understand you, is you're saying that in the woman, I must split it between disabled woman, youth, and woman.
Not necessarily. We're clear on disabled. We're clear on youth. But we're not clear on others. In terms of actual percentage.
Within rural and semi.
Yes.
You want me to split that between youth?
Exactly.
Okay.
Because that will make up the 100%.
Okay.
Because the way it is, it's like it's over and above 100%.
Okay. So you need additional information to this. Okay, we'll get that information.
That's why we say by Friday, yes.
Okay.
Just a comment. I think the other reason why we are so particular about this is that they are going to form records, you know, which could be referred to later. So it's important that where we use figures and graphs, it's important that we are as accurate as possible and that it can be interpreted for the benefit of other people who are not necessarily even in the committee.
Yeah, then the issue about why there isn't a focus on men, I think historically what we find is that that women tend to access microfinance rather than men, and on those bases we've prepared our targets. It wasn't discriminatory in any way. It's in respect of what actually happens on the ground. We prepared those targets.
No, they care more about bigger issues. management about the signage?
Chair, then in terms of it's a dangerous territory to debate. Chair, just to say
that's
that
I don't have my mic on when I said those things.
Chair, just to also say that, just to reiterate, it is our intention to bring all men to this committee. It's unfortunate that's the way it's been. There's been a transformation at CMF, and when I took over acting, some of our executives left, and two of them were female, of the four. These are all my colleagues are just acting, and we didn't fill the positions because of the impending merger with Kula. Chair, in terms of partnerships with our financial intermediaries, the intention of CMF is to have a relationship that does not just it's not only the formal relationship in terms of the contractual obligations. Okay, we have difficulty; we can't impose. But what we can do, we can build a relationship with them to say that you need to do certain things. For example, in terms of contract, we say to them that you need to, 80% of your funds need to go to entrepreneurship. That we can do. But in terms of charging the interest rate, we can't impose on them except for the NCR. The NCR rates are there. Because you see, they utilize that to make their own profits for sustainability. And I do know the committee has a difficulty in terms of the high interest rates that are being charged. But we began a process of interacting with these institutions to see that they're not charging high interest rates and making high profits at the same time. So we begin with that process, and it's a difficult process. It's got to be an ongoing process, Chair, in terms of ensuring that the service fees and the interest are not too high. Then, Chair, the 30-day payment, I indicated that we at the moment achieve payments within 14 days. You're right. What we've done is we've just taken what the legislation says, and you said we'll pay within 30 days. But maybe we should have put 14 days. We pay within 14 days at the moment, but legislation requires us to pay within 30 days. So what we've done, we've taken the legislative requirement and put that as part of our targets. And then the budget, in terms of software maintenance, it's included under administration costs. So we didn't separate that. If you look at the budget at the end, you have a budget for admin costs, admin expenses. So your software maintenance, any maintenance of any nature is included under administrative costs. So there is a budget for that. Chair, the education loans, I spoke about the education loans earlier on. The repayment of supplies, the 30 days, I've spoken about that. Chair, the products and services that are in this document are approved. I approved products and services. We've developed a new set of products and services that we submitted to the department for approval. So the one that's in here is the approved one. It's the one that we are currently utilizing. In terms of building capacity within, the chair asked a question about being able to support the new products and services. What we have done is we are, as I indicated, we spent a lot of money this year building capacity within the institution to be able to roll out those new products and services to the communities. So we believe, and as indicated, it's an ongoing process. And you will have gaps here and there because we're dealing with nine different provinces, but we believe we have sufficient capacity to be able to roll out those products and services. Then the issue about social workers. Now this is historical. It was done when CEMEC was first established. At that time, they believed that social workers would be the best people to be able to interact with communities, without realizing that you probably require financial expertise also. But what we've done is we've sent them on training. We've got a partnership with the University of Pretoria that's developed a training course, a microfinance training course. What we've also done, over and above that, we've now employed Indian youth that have stayed out of university that have accounting degrees. that assist our provincial offices. In most provinces, we have two of those youth that we've employed. And we actually finished that whole employment program as at the end of February this year. Chair, I think I've covered most of the questions. I don't know if my colleagues want to assist with the others that I've missed. The current strategic plan, how does it differ from the previous one? Chair, in the current strategic plan, you see in the previous one, we've never had targets per province in the previous strategic plan. We just had this overall targets. The second thing is, for the first time, we put targets, employment targets. For the first time, we put targets of outreach to communities themselves. And just in terms of the targets itself, I think the chair also asked, is it achievable? We consulted extensively with our provincial office. As I indicated, that the 9 months that I've been acting, we have dispersed 37 million rand in the 9 months that I've been there. That's more than they've ever dispersed an entire year in the previous financial years. And to be able to disperse, you must put a lot of processes in place. You must start establishing institutions. Now, we've done a lot of that, and you'll see when we do the annual report, you'll see that we've established a whole lot of new institutions mm-hmm. that we've now registered that will only start getting funding from the next financial year. So we think the basis has now been set in this financial year to be able to take that forward in the next financial year.
Have you responded to all the questions, or because I doubt that you have responded? Maybe if
oh okay.
No, Chair. In terms of the modus operandi for our products, there should never be inconsistencies. It's got to be consistent. So if you have an institution that has 150 members. And you only give them 200,000 rand for capacity building, that should be applied consistently, right through. So if anybody has applied it inconsistently, they did it wrongly. But what we have done now we've now put an additional process within CEMAC. We now got a due diligence team. So once the provincial offices have done what they need to do, and this is also segregation of duties that's required by the auditors, we've now got a due diligence team that ensures that there is consistency in what we do. There should never be inconsistencies. So Patrick, I don't know if there's another one.
There was the issue of benchmark with regards to the quantity that you will create so many jobs. There is no benchmark in the microfinance so far, as far as I know. But what we have been looking at, we have been looking at a situation where we say, if the you can expend an amount of about 5,000 to create an entrepreneur, which is a micro entrepreneur. Obviously, that person could be able to sustain because they are not looking at big volumes, they are looking at small volumes. And even if you look at there is also a view of small business that is 50,000. Would be regarded as the amount that could be targeted as the value that could be taken as an amount which could create one job. But even that 50,000, as far as I know, it's not a benchmark. It's not based on anything. You find some are saying it's 500,000, depending on the size of the loans that they give. So we're also saying to ourselves, because the loans that we're giving are very small loans, that is why we are looking at an amount of about 5,000 men.
Are you saying, let's say, because the government or the president said in 10 years' time we will create 5 million jobs? Are they using the same to say if we use so much money, we don't have something tangible to say these are the jobs we are going to create. Is that what you mean?
Chair, in fact, let me just explain the methodology we used. What we did was, in our interaction with the end users, together with yourselves and also our own interaction with our end users, and remember that CEMF loans are between up to the maximum of 10,000 rand, end user loans. Okay. So what we did was, with the interaction with our financial intermediary also, we worked out an average of what we thought an average loan, or how many jobs an average loan can create. What we've come to is that it would take an average of 5,000 rand to create one job. So for example, if somebody wants to do sewing, they can take a loan of 5,000 rand average, or 10,000 rand, but we worked on an average of 5,000 rand. That's the basis on which we worked. So it wasn't we just thumb suck the figures. It was scientifically done and in consultation with our financial intermediaries.
Oh, okay, thank you. You said now you have exhausted your question, because I can say that man today is if you feel you have exhausted, maybe I'll give it to the members just to highlight if they feel they were not answered before I give the other round.
My question was on lack of capacity, you know, vis-a-vis key deliverables over the 3-year period. I asked, how do you see yourself achieving these key deliverables with the current situation of lack of capacity? In other words, do you have a contingency plan, whereas on the other hand, we're still dealing with
the
issue of capacity?
That
was my question.
See, I think my colleagues will help me, because they're on the ground. What we have done this year is that we have worked extensively in terms of not the numbers, but capacitating the people that are there in terms of knowledge of financial, of microfinance, the various training interventions. What we've also done is, and as I indicated, we've in most provinces we've now recruited at least at a maximum two interns who are degreed students who will assist these the provincial officer with the targets, and we believe that we can meet these targets, and that is very clear from what we've achieved in this past 9 months as an organisation. So we think these targets are very fair and practical.
Okay, thanks, Mabana. The chairperson is coming back, but he delegated Mabuntu to hold the fort. I'll just request the members to have a second bite, and then we'll hand over back to you. Are there any members wants to ask? One, if they okay, Mabuso Jesse is the first one. I will be asking. I will be the second one, because I would like to ask some as well. Thanks.
Yeah, one is bothered by the resignation of the female staff members. I would like to know if there were efforts to engage them, you know, in order to discourage them from leaving. You know, usually we have what we call an exit interview, just to assess yourself as a manager or the institution, because some of the reasons for resignation are genuine. They give you the opportunity to see yourself and identify areas where you need improvement. Were there such an engagement to talk to them, just to find out why this resignation, and one wonders why all the female staff members, you know, just let go. And on the issue of acting, you know, it's a problem when we have many people acting, it deals with one's commitment. You never know how to plan, not necessarily never knowing how to plan, but the commitment thereof. And also, if you can get a commitment from yourself in terms of the turnaround, you know, time frame, as to when are you going to achieve whatever you said you're going to achieve, so that you can do oversight and assess on the basis of your commitment. And on the conditions of execution, you did explain that you're not doing that directly. But I think if the SSCs cannot collect indirectly, you are being affected, taking into consideration the fact that people could, you know, graduate from school and take time to find a job in order to be able to repay the loans. How do you deal with the situation? Because I see a risk of bad debt in a way. The situation that you cannot say for sure I didn't get a job by when after graduating.
Thanks, Mama, for that. Babu Naito, the training, this thing, training, you've got some monies with the University of, is it Wits or Pretoria? I'm checking here, we've got the Department of Higher Education, which is also looking after this training. With yours, how does it interlink with the higher education, or what is the relationship? We've got FIDA, who's there to deal with the capacity building of these financial institutions, and then I'm checking here the duplication or parallel institutions or parallel tasks. You find that there's somebody who's supposed to be doing this, and you also do something. And I'm just checking that whether aren't we duplicating, or what do we call it, where we find each over each other. In then you cannot differentiate, or you cannot be able to get the proper results. Then the last one, before I hand it over back to Chairperson, is that I think we need a debate or an argument about the, you said you cannot prescribe to the FIs the interest rate. Now I'm asking myself, if we cannot prescribe the interest rate, whom are we targeting? Let's say if we give money, aren't we targeting the end user there, that is the poor of the poorest must be accepted. But if we give the IF the money and we say, just go and see how to exploit those people from Walamba, you just come up with the 80% interest, and the intention is that the government wants to eradicate poverty or to fight poverty. But at the same time, you say, no, you cannot regulate, you can't prescribe to the financial intermediaries. Because now I'm asking myself, what are we trying to achieve? Are we trying to assist the FIs? I mean, the FIs, if we say, we just give you money, then you see, you can do as you like. I just want to check that, because I think it is a contentious point. I mean, we need to argue. So I want you to come clear on that one. Chairperson, that was the second round of questions. I was the last one asking. So if you want to have a fight on that one, yeah, you'd be the last one.
Yeah. Thanks, sir. Mr. Naidoo, you may respond.
The Chair, the issue of the interest rates, I am on one with you on that particular matter. The issue of the sustainability of the institution dictates on what interest rates they should charge. What we have begun a process of interacting with the institution on a voluntary basis to be able to indicate to them what level of capacity building money would they require so that their interest rate is not too high and they also are sustainable. Unfortunately, that is the only source of income that they have, is the interest that they earn. So we are busy engaging with the financial intermediaries, and hopefully, Chair, when we come back with on our annual report, we'll be able to give you some kind of results of some of the initial interactions that we've had with these financial intermediaries. But I agree with you fully that we can't be giving these intermediaries money and they charge high interest rates because they want to make high profits for themselves.
Can I come to on that? I think we need to open this for discussions now with you present. We must use this opportunity because at least we were with you when we were interacting. Because, you know, SAMAF has a reason for existence. And that reason is to ensure that actually mainly you're targeting people who are called, they are referred to as survivalists. What does that mean? You need, those are the targeted, not the intermediaries. Yes, they might be survivalists, but not at the expense of those survivalist businesses. It cannot be. I think we must discuss this, that what is it that we are in existence for? If people want to be in a clear, great business mode, let them go and compete with the relevant people and not, you know, be opportunistic. Because that's another issue. I don't mind if they get money from the commercial bank and then they commercialize their thing, it's fine. But if you get money from commercial bank and then we're targeting people, we want people... I mean, they are targeting people who depend on this money as a way of generating income for their families. Because that's the only source of income generation. They don't have any other. And they still have to deal with issues of repayment and so. So why are we creating some of them if really we need that? Those are the issues that we need to... You know, it's politics. But it's really politics of the stomach. And these politics of the stomach are very, very sensitive. And when we deal with them, we must be very sensitive also because we don't want to make people rich at the expense of other, of the poorest of the poor. We want people who have development, you know, who are always thinking of other people's development. Because you can't be FI if you're not developmental in approach. And if you are developmental in approach, you have a heart. And that heart would then dictate you to say, this is the approach that you need to take in terms of other people addressing issues of the poorest of the poor. But I'm opening it with those remarks so that the colleagues can also remember where we're coming from and why we've created them. Because the chair of the board of Kula was correct in saying this was taken out of Kula. Some of was taken out of Kula before so that it can be able to address challenges that rural areas were complaining about. That was very specific. But now we see urban people who are affluent or who are affluent now trying to take advantage of that space and then, you know, to create quick money. It's not the way to create. We are not going to allow that. We understand business, but this is not business targeted only. It's targeting at those very least people. I've noted Member Mabasa, Member Zodesi, Member Anyakem. Can we just discuss this with an intention of really giving guidance? Because as politicians, we can't be quiet. We have to say something. Okay. Member Is it an interjection? Okay.
Just a proposal, and under correction, that maybe we first get the explanation why this practice, then engage in the explanation as to what is
I thought I was responding to the explanation because that was the explanation that made me react in the way I'm reacting. You missed that one, okay. Babu Mabasa.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. Maybe we must also ask ourselves and say, do we need financial intermediaries? What is their purpose? And if we mistakenly brought them on board, then we must offload them. If offloading them will make us, will make the needy people to interact with yourself directly, that's the challenge that I'm putting across to all of us. Because I think the chair has covered us, covered me well, in the sense that it is possible for the end user to end up paying a higher interest than she or he would have paid at a bank. So in other words, we are not, the intermediaries, financial intermediaries are no longer different from Abu Mashonisa. You know, it's maybe we are missing something. If you can clarify us, so that we all move together. Thanks.
Thanks, Babu Mabasa. Do you still want to come in, ma'am? So just okay. Second.
Here's the deputy chair. No, chair. Really, I think Comrade Mabasa has taken my point, because if these financial intermediaries, they do as they wish, there's no difference between them and Deborah Broker. Because at the same time, sir, I'm looking at the mandate, which is in this presentation that was presented to us, the mandate. Now, if obviously for whatever reason, and then the mandate would not necessarily be adhered to. I just want to read it on record, on page 3, to create work opportunities and sustainable livelihoods through the facilitation and provision of affordable access to finance by macro, small and survivalist business for the purpose of growing their income and asset base. I think we might understand this differently from where you are sitting. And I think the points that we are raising are informed by why SAMAF was created in the first place. We might have a different understanding, and you have a different understanding, and different interpretations of what exactly is the mandate of SAMAF. Because if really is to say, let those loan sharks exist, I mean, really, there's a problem.
Thanks.
I want to repeat what has been said by my colleagues. I'll just say the practice defeats the good intention of the mandate.
Okay. That's why we are lawmakers. I think we must assist the process, because we are representing those people at the end of the day. We all of us have brothers and sisters, aunts and so forth, who are living every day and who are being drained by these loan sharks. we cannot afford to allow that to happen, especially using developmental money from government to do so. That money is meant to develop. It's not meant to be, you know, doing otherwise. So I think we must refocus and put things into perspective. Because this category is created specifically for that. Well, cooler can cater for them. It's not a problem. Those who really want to do business and be not just the normal business people, but people, business people who are very, very shrewd. At this level, shrewdness doesn't exist. I don't think we should allow it to exist here, because we are dealing with very tender, very, very people who need tender care. You know, I think you saw those women. I mean, when I spoke to them on the side, they were saying, we live, you know, this repayment is very difficult to us. That's why I tried to force them to talk, but they couldn't talk because they're scared. I mean, when we are gone, they wouldn't even be able to face, because we don't know whether they'll remain and be victimized or so. But the fact of the matter is they can't survive. They survive because they are a group and they encourage each other. But if you want to see growth in those women sewing groups, you won't see that growth in the, for the coming 5 years. And why are they in the thing? Just to buy bread on the table and be able to pay school fees of 20 rands, it's not what we want. We can't pay millions and millions of money for that. Otherwise we'll be irresponsible politicians. We cannot allow that. So we are saying, therefore, that we really need to look into this. And this is a discussion that must continue. But we are giving also yourselves a homework to look at that. Use this opportunity while you are merging, so that you can package you can model yourself, you know, correctly, so that you are able to help those people. You might talk numbers in terms of outputs, because, you know, outputs normally is numbers, but outcomes is what really matters. That's why government is emphasizing on outcomes, so that you can see the real impact on the ground. I did development studies, I know. That's what I'm talking about. That. And unfortunately, my research was in the Western Cape in the 90s. So I did it and I understand what's happening in the Western Cape. So it's very important that we really look at, when we talk development, we talk real development. So I'm appealing to you, Mr. Naidu, that let's really look into this. We'll do our homework as a committee. And we will come back to the minister, if not to you, to the minister, to say this is what we think should be done through Parliament. Of course, we'll do that through our recommendations. But we also, I'm glad that you are saying you also don't agree. But saying it and not coming up with alternative and continue with the same pattern is not enough. That's what we're trying to say. I'm sorry to belabor the point. You had the second question, I think, that you needed to respond to. Dr. Rabi, you wanted to say something? Okay, thank you.
No, Jay, in fact, on the point, as you say, we fully agree with you. What we'd also like to do is maybe when you're finalizing the paper, maybe we'd like to engage with you further and give our experiences so that it could be taken into account when you do your final presentation. We really appreciate that. We also want the cost to come down. And that's why you'll see we're focusing on FSCs. What FSCs does is it works on smaller communities. It works on a common bond basis. So what happens is the community comes together and they form, they're part of the institution. So any money they lend, they will be lending to the members. And any profits they make will be shared by the members. And you'll see that we're trying to focus on FSCs. But Chair, we'd really appreciate engaging with you when you finalize the paper. Then, Chair, one of the members spoke about the resignation of of the women at SEMEF. There were two executives that had resigned. I think one had to resign because of that dealt with financial management, and it was quite poor, so she resigned. The others resigned for I'm led to believe they got better jobs, but I think they also got wind of the merger of SEMEF and Gula. That was the other reason they resigned. I don't believe these positions are going to be filled because of the merger of SEMEF and Gula, which hopefully will happen by end of this year. But what we're doing is we've started the process already of the merger. We've got work streams put together. So we're hoping that all of the administrative aspects, the back office, will already come together even before the end of the financial year. So you wouldn't need to, for example, employ an HR executive. You wouldn't need to employ a CFO because there'll be one CFO. So these positions will be acting until that process is finalized. Even the CEO's position won't be filled. It'll fall under Gula.
Okay, ma'am, you wanted to follow up? Yes.
From the presentation before SEMEF, even this one of SEMEF, we do not have a specific time to say when is the merger. And I think HR is the most critical in every organization. Like we talk now of lack of capacity. So for me, it doesn't gel really. Especially if, why only women have to resign?
No, there's also men that resigned here. In fact, all the executives, just only the executives resigned. So the COO, the HR executive, and the finance executive.
But for skills retention, like I say, usually in HR, when people resign, especially senior management, you engage people and try to find out what could be the reason so to improve the institution. And my question was, did you do that? Engage them as to why do they leave.
No,
chair,
I did.
Do you have a retention strategy in place?
Yes, we do have a retention strategy.
Did you follow the processes and procedures?
Yes, we did.
In terms of that? Yes. Okay, if you just can talk to that so that maybe if there is what you issue a report or certificate of release wherein, just as an example, so that you can see if you have interviewed them to say, and if you have, give them, if you felt they were valuable, if you gave them counter offers and so forth, or you just said no, good riddance. So we just want to find out because that exit interview form, if you have it, if you're saying you have a strategy, that would be in place and you'll have clear records of what you had to go through before they finally got released. I think you told it to a specialist, HR specialist.
Yeah. Chair, we do have those processes in place. We do have a HR exit form that has to be filled. They did not fill it. I certainly, particularly the HR executive, I personally spoke to her and asked her, can I do anything to retain you in the organization? She felt that she was better off because she wanted to go for greener pastures. But my sense is that it was more because of the merger of school and SEMEF. So they didn't want to fill the form in, unfortunately, and it's voluntary, it's not discretionary.
All right, we'll take your word for that. And I mean, it's true, you can't force people if they don't want, and you can't force them to sign or to fill up the form if they don't, but if they know that's part of the package, if the strategy was workshopped to members, to staff members, then they would have done that before they left. Any other question that's outstanding? Okay.
Chair, the issue of time frames for these targets, there are quarterly milestones that have been developed for each of the targets that need to be achieved in this financial year. So there are definite targets and time frames around that that we have within the organization. Then the collection. I agree that if if your FSCs do not collect, they won't be able to repay SMF. There's a couple of things that we have done, that we've started to do. We've in fact got part of the product sheet, is to be able to provide relief, to be able to give them a moratorium. So if a financial institution is struggling and they definitely cannot collect the funds, they can apply for a moratorium for non-payment or non-repayment or reduced repayment to SMF. So we have that in place. That's the very best we could do. What we've also done is there are some institutions and small institutions that have got into serious financial distress, and I was explaining to the chair earlier that SMF, prior to me coming, decided to take legal action against them. We've in fact suspended those legal actions to understand what the reasons were for these institutions going or being litigated against. And we found a lot of cases that we could actually resuscitate those institutions because, and we believe they've got the capacity and the capability, they already got the skills. Litigating at them is not going to help because they can't repay us anyway. So we put a program, in fact there's a product that we've also submitted to the department to approve, a resuscitation product to assist these institutions. And with a resuscitation program, it doesn't mean that we're going to write off what they owe us. They must also try and collect that to repay SMF.
Okay.
So
how does the moratorium affect their interest?
The interest that SMF charges, for the, even from the intermediary to the end user, no, it won't have any effect at all.
I'm interested in the rescue package. Is that what you call it? Yes. How does it work, and who do you rescue? Just unpack that for us so that we understand what you're talking about. And who qualifies, if you were to tell us?
Madam Chair, maybe if I can just give a bit of an explanation. When we started with the summer program, we initially injected about 480,000 into, for example, a small startup intermediary. And so what had happened during the first year of startup, and there was a budget that had been put in place with that intermediary, and obviously even at that point we had indicated to them, because they were small and startup, keep your interest rates low. During the first year, they really conducted business well. They had repaid their loan consistently for about 2 years. There was about, I'd say about 18 months, 18 to 24 months, where some of, for a period, and it will probably indicate that's part of the reason that there was limited disbursements made, but policies and procedures were then put in place. And a real touch squeeze that then come on these intermediaries. So with the new policies and procedures that some have in fact put in place, a lot of these organizations now didn't qualify for a refinancing or for them to get additional funds to grow their loan book, to then sustain their operations and repay some of. So a lot of them just started lagging behind. So the clients were still repaying, but they couldn't from the repayments afford to keep on operating and repay the sum of allowance. So a lot of them, just the squeeze just became greater. They stopped paying some of because they wanted to keep operations going. Eventually some of them actually died out completely. Some of them are still going on, mainly with volunteers, and they're still trying to repay some of with little bits of money, maybe not what they're supposed to pay on a monthly basis, but little bits of money. So it's those organizations that we've actually now picked up this value here. I think some have had a role to play in terms of them going through the battlefield. And now we've re-looked at and we're coming with a resuscitation plan to try and bring them back on board, because the client
a danger there, because they might have taken a lot, you know, too much bite and not being able to chew. That might be the case. I'll tell you of the one, the women's group that we went to in KZN, in Durban. They started themselves, you know, they are borrowing at 3 to 6%. They have brackets. When I read their brochure, it says they charge 3% for 3 months. Up to 3 months, they charge up to 5% on, I think, if you have more than 3 months or so. The higher you, the higher the period, the lower the interest rate. But what I'm trying to say is that they don't go beyond 6%. You borrow the money with 4.4%, and they charge their clients not more than 6%. And they've been able to sustain themselves, and actually that drives them even further, because they are women, they're developmental in their, you know, approach of things. There's this group here in Western Cape that went to at Khayelitsha. They were there before. What is it? Not Tesla, the other one. Yes. The one that I went to and left in the morning after that. Yes. They've been there before. You resuscitated them, actually. And now they're coming up with this very same interest rate. Did we check the history and understand why were they not coping before? And then do we have conditions? Because, you see, if we are just going to rescue people out of their own carelessness, and then we're saying we rescue you because your clients want you, is it really assisting? It's not. We cannot allow the situation like that, because people don't understand their mandate. And then they overcommit, and when people can't afford, then they die out, and then, you know, then you ask yourself, if you charge 16% or so, and you are not able to repay, what does that mean? And a person who charges 3 to 5% is able to repay, then you ask yourself, where lies the problem? Because they get too much out of their business. These ones don't get that much. They are able to sustain. These ones are not able to sustain. Then the reason for existence is wrong for these people. So then you have to look at such issues and be able to curtail. Because otherwise we will be, you know, resuscitating. This is what we were telling yesterday, IDC, that you give people, you rescue people who just do not want to be rescued, but they get preference in terms of rescuing. And then you end up spending money, and then they will die again, and then expecting the government to resuscitate them again. So I think we really need to look at this, and I would appreciate if you can provide the committee with this package, the package model, so that we understand what the Western Cape is doing, so that we can be able to say, to give a say in, to have a say in this thing. If it's a working model that is really going to help others, there must be conditions. This is the taxpayers' money. We can't just be allow anything to go by without having to look. We don't want to curtail. We don't want to be to interfere. But if it has to do with the plight of our people, we are going to be to come in, Mr. Daniels. Halan. Halan, yes, Mr. Halan. Sorry. I don't know why I keep on saying you're Daniels, Mr. Daniels. Maybe you need to change your service. That was on a lighter note. And I know she might be wondering, why am I giving Mr. Harris his name? Sorry about that. Mr. Naidu?
Yeah, I was going to say that I think the committee's input into that particular product will be very useful, because we've not implemented it yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've just developed it. So we will certainly forward it to you.
Thank you. Was that the last issue you were dealing with?
Yes, yeah, I've covered the second round of questions that were asked.
Okay. You can see how much interest we have in this, because this deals with the core of our, you know, of our population. You know, these are the people we are very sensitive and we are very cautious, especially when we're dealing with, because they are people who are really genuine, honest, and people who don't complain at the end of the day. But we can't take advantage of them like that. All right. Obviously, we see the reason for the work, you know, for the existence of this type of intervention by government, but it must be done correctly. We all agree that it must be done correctly. Thank you very much for the briefing. Thank you very much for the work that you are trying to do in order to correct issues. Things last year, I know that you were very, very jittery, not because you are a shy person, but because of the challenges that you had on your table. And unfortunately, we were not helpful. We just put more pressure on you. And this is because of the type of work you are doing, unfortunately. And we're hoping that by this, we do not show lack of support to you, but in reality, it's that because we care and we want the right product to be given to our people at the end of the day. That's why we will see us being like this. And if it comes out as though we don't care, we do care and would want to see you succeeding. And we'll always be beside you so that you are, as long as you are doing what we want you to do, because we want to end poverty in our rural areas. So the more income into our households, the better. We want to eliminate that 285 rent per to something like 5,000 rand in a household at least. And that would have improved the inequities, income inequities that we have in our rural areas. We want to see poverty being not just alleviated, but being dealt with completely. And 2014 is just around the corner. And this is one department that is leading outcome number 4, which is very critical to our country. So we jealously guarding against anything that will work against that, the achievement of that outcome number 4 and other outcomes that are related to that. Otherwise, thank you very much for your presentation, for your presence and clarifications that you've given us. We will await the information that you promised by Friday, if it can reach the secretary's office, before we conclude our report on Wednesday, because we want to have those documents first. By the time we meet on Wednesday, we have members should have read or could have gone through that information. Thank you, and we are at the moment releasing you and wishing you all the best in your work. Yes, Mr. Naidu.
Just to say that we certainly appreciate the interaction of this committee. It's tough, but it's very useful. And whatever you say, we take seriously. And you'll see in a lot of the work that we do, already engagements we had during our visits and our previous engagements, we've gone and implemented a lot of that. So we will take a lot of guidance from you, and we appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and thanks really for availing yourselves during our outreach, especially that you brought your main executives. It really says a lot to us as a committee. You are released. Members, can we remain for a few minutes to dispose of one issue on the that was supposed to be on the agenda? Still on the agenda, yeah. It's on the agenda. Le room is valid. Yeah.